This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Main Event, a roundtable experience looking at today's pro wrestling landscape. And now, here's your host, Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation! I feel like we haven't done this show in like 80 years, but it's just been that kind of summer. Welcome to episode 39 of your home for everything modern-day wrestling, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. I am your host, Scott Criscolo. Great show tonight, like every night, and a good star-studded cast here. Because we've got a lot to talk about. The main thing we'll be talking about, some news just popped up. We'll get to that in a minute. But, of course, the big story is this Sunday from the Scott Trade Center in St. Louis, and that is Battleground. And we will talk about that tonight and preview it for you. And then we'll have some fun in segment two, some type of potpourri. We're not sure. Big surprises coming up in segment two. But first, let me bring in the group tonight, one half of the Core Four, the conscience of Place to Be Nation, and a guy who I'm going to make a deal with right after I introduce him, Mr. Steve Willey.
I'm excited. Like, you're like Wayne Brady or Monty Hall.
Exactly.
You're going to make a deal? I don't want to get zonked.
No, you're not going to get zonked. If you wear, because we, of course, we're going to SummerSlam.
Indeed.
If you wear your Jervis Cottonbelly mask, I will wear Becky Lynch steampunk goggles. Done!
I thought you were going to say where you'll wear Becky Lynch. And I was like, wow.
Oh, God, I love
that. That'd be really exciting.
Oh, my God, she was so hot the other night. All right. yeah, Mr. Morse and I have a differing opinions on Becky Lynch, but not in her ability, in her looks. But Steve, good to have you on, as always. Boogie of the Bayou. What's up, Andrew Reich?
Doing good. Hanging in there. But do we really have to talk about Battleground?
Yes. By the way, you know what I have in the background?
You know how this always goes with Battleground.
You know what I have in the background playing? I found it on YouTube. Game 2 of the 1986 Western Conference semifinals between the Dallas Mavericks and the Los Angeles Lakers. Can you give me the Mavericks starting lineup?
Derek Harper.
Wrong.
What?
He was still in college.
Okay. Mark Aguirre, Rolando Blackman.
Yes.
I think Roy Tarpley was still coming off the bench at that point.
Yeah, he was not a starter. Nope.
He wasn't a starter yet. Perkins?
Sam Perkins.
Nice. Wow.
Brad Davis?
No.
Fuck!
Donaldson.
James Donaldson.
And you know what? I missed the fifth guy because it just came off the screen. But it was not Roy Tarpley, and it was not dumb.
No, I'm trying to remember. I know in 87... They had, well, no, it wasn't 87.
Let me look. Rolando Blackman.
Derek Harper was on that team.
I'm looking at the guys now on the court. Mark Aguirre, Donaldson, Rolando Blackman, Sam Perkins, and I got to look and see. Well, I'll check as we go on.
Derek Harper in 1984 had that incident where he ran the clock out when the game
was
tied.
Oh, right, he ran the clock out. That's right.
That was in 84, so he must have been on that
team. Okay, so he must have been in the league. Rolando Blackman. Anyway, we'll take a look. Oh, who's 12? Maybe that was Derek Harper.
That is Derek Harper.
Oh. My bad. You are correct.
That's an old dude.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Mr. Reich, pleasure as always. And joining us this evening, God, I can't remember the last time I've been on with this guy. I guess it was the monthly rewind show when we did Over the Edge 98. He is a huge contributor to PlaceToBeNation.com. My little bunny, Mr. Glenn Butler. Welcome back, Lenny Bun.
No whammy. Stop.
Stop. You can be like that guy. Remember that guy in like, what was it, like 85? He counted the, you know that story?
Crazy dude
counted the blinks and everything, and he won like, what's the most you used to win on that show? Like 30,000 probably? This guy won like 120,000.
He robbed him blind.
And then he tried to like extort some infomercial group, and now he's like in prison. I think he died.
He lost it all. Yeah, he lost it all.
Like
he
prison
won
and
a bunch
shit.
More money. And
yeah, I got to look that up.
He's a sociopath.
Glenn, nice to have you on, man.
Thank you. Yeah, I remember reading an article about the atmosphere in the studio when they started to realize he was hacking the show and everyone on the staff just sort of looking around like, what the hell do we do?
I know. Yeah. What? I mean, it's crazy. I have to look that up. Guys, we do have to talk about Battleground. Sorry, Mr. Ish. But we got six matches set. One of them is on the pre-show. Should be on the regular show, but whatever. I mean, there's only five matches on the main show. Does that mean one of these matches can be... Well, I don't know. We'll talk about it. Six matches total. One on the pre-show, and then five on the main show. The pre-show match is a feud that's kind of been going on, seems like forever. R-Truth against King Barrett for Barrett's King of the Ring crown. Of course, he won at that special show on the network a couple months ago. And then the other five matches, Roman Reigns versus Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton versus Sheamus, John Cena will defend his United States Championship as we see him face Kevin Owens for the third consecutive time. The Primetime Players will defend the tag team titles against the New Day in a rematch. And of course, for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, Seth Rollins will defend against Brock Lesnar. Rish, just give me two things. Wrestler, match, story, anything. Just give me two things you're most looking forward to on Sunday in general.
I'm going to be genuinely excited to watch Lesnar wrestle Rollins because I know he was in the three-way with him in the Royal Rumble, and then Rollins jumped in at the end of WrestleMania. But, I mean, let's be honest. You know, Lesnar hasn't really worked with that many different people outside of, you know, the mainstays like Undertaker, Cena, Triple H. You know, he had the one with Punk, but, you know, and then obviously Reigns at WrestleMania, and then he played around with Kofi Kingston like he was like, he was a rag. Liver threw him around like a rag doll for about 5 minutes. But, I think Rollins will be able to get a lot out of Lesnar that we saw in the Royal Rumble. I don't think that was – I'm not trying to take anything away from John Cena, but I thought that Rollins brought a dimension to what Lesnar can do as a big man that made the match more entertaining. And I'm really anxious to see what Rollins is going to be able to do, kind of like play the Shawn Michaels against Diesel type of thing where he bounces around like a pinball and, you know, makes Lesnar look like a god amongst men. Mm-hmm. And obviously you can't not be excited for any Kevin Owens match at this point. He's delivered so big against Cena twice in a row. And this time the title's on the line, the U.S. title for that matter. So it's going to be, those are the most important matches, or the matches that people are, like, talking about the most. And those are obviously the ones. I do want to say that I really hope that they kind of throw in there Cesaro versus Rusev, unless they got plans for that one kind of at a later date on Raw. But I would like to see that match if they can fit enough time on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, like I just said, there's only five matches on the main card. And then the one, I could see, I guess, Rollins and Brock go, you know, a half hour.
See, that's the problem, though. You know, Lesnar is kind of like that, you know, like Vince called him on that podcast he had with Steve Austin. He's a special attraction. The problem with Lesnar is that at what point can you really extend him? I mean, the only reason the three-way was so long is because they were able to have these moments where Lesnar could kind of sit around after being double teamed and, you know, and pounded on, and it went about 24 minutes. You know, I don't know if Lesnar is kind of built to have that type of a match. Not that he can't have it. He went like half an hour with The Undertaker, but I don't know if that's his, like, I don't think that's the best way of using him. You know, it's tough because, you know, you want like an epic match, but you have to kind of put it in Lesnar's format, and that goes no longer than about 16 or 15 minutes.
Mm. Willie, what anything sticking out?
Yeah, there's a few things, which is different for me than a general WWE show. And actually, as we're speaking right now, I have SmackDown on in the background, and the Cesaro-Rusev match is happening right now. Not to say that it won't happen again in the future, because it's on SmackDown, which exists in a vacuum.
Yeah, they might run the same match four times in a row, get out of town.
Yeah, but Cesaro actually is one of the first things that I'm interested in. In my mind, the three of the top stories, the things that I've been interested in the last 3 or 4 weeks, two of them are not booked on the show. One of them is being Cesaro's kind of little push that he's gotten over the last couple of weeks, having these two stellar matches against Cena. The three-way this past Monday on Raw, And I'm not paying attention to this match, but I'm assuming that Cesaro versus Rusev one-on-one match would be pretty good to see. He's not on the show, at least booked on the show. Will he have a run-in? Will he make an appearance in the Cena-Owens match? Will they throw him in something else? It just seems kind of bizarre that one of your big names from the last couple weeks, who's gotten a half an hour last week against Cena, who was on screen for about 20, 25 minutes this past week on Raw, about 20, 25 minutes the week before, getting huge crowd reactions isn't going to, you know, get a match that's advertised. And the second one is the NXT, the women's call up, you know, with a huge response and nothing really mentioned for the show coming up this weekend that they're trying to push. Nothing even really for the Divas that you announced there.
So, I know, considering the segment we just saw this past Monday, kind of odd.
Yeah, and that leads to the question, was that a last-minute addition? Is that something they had not had planned until then? Maybe they panicked looking at their... You know, obviously that's what it was building towards, the storyline along with Paige. But why not have a match? You would think you had nine girls in the ring last week going at it. Like, that'd be kind of interesting having like a...
They had nine girls going at it?
Yeah. That was...
CW.
I promise that's the last time I'll do that.
Okay.
The second thing I'm kind of looking forward to is not just the uncertainty of who's going to be booked on the show, but the uncertainty of the outcomes. Because those two big matches, Cena Owens and Brock Rollins, there's not a clear winner there. The last main events have been pretty obvious. Like, you knew that Rollins was going to win against Ambrose. You know, they had the dusty finish the previous one. With the Beast from the East show, you had a, you know, pretty positive that Balor was going to beat Owens. I'm not 100% certain on either of these matches. I think the Cena-Owens one, well, I would think that the story dictates it would go to Owens to keep pushing him forward, and that's why he lost the NXT title. It's still he going against John Cena. The main event, you would think that it would be Brock, because how are they going to have Rollins beat Brock, except for a lot of chicanery? But then it's Battleground. It's not SummerSlam. So, and I mentioned, I heard Justin talking about this to Kevin Kelly. Like, what are they going to do at SummerSlam, though? So there's uncertainty there. And I kind of like that. It's a little unpredictable. It's not the norm for a WWE show. And yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this, Rollins. I think the match is going to be very good, though.
Agreed.
I think Brock, and no, I know, Reach, I'm not jumping off the anti-Brock bandwagon. He's still not one of my favorite people, but
it's okay.
But well, that's right. Dr. G breaks my balls about it now too. But let's admit it: the guy elicits a response from the crowd, and he—I think—he cares more about having good matches than we thought he did. We used to think he'd walk in, get a paycheck, and beat the shit out of somebody and move on. But I think this is a match where it needs to be good. So I think you're going to see a good match out of both guys. I'm looking forward to seeing what Seth Rollins can do, because he really hasn't faced anybody this big and this powerful. I mean, he went through the stretch with Ambrose, and they're pretty much the same size. So that's the interesting thing with me. We'll get to that match in a minute. Glennie, anything? What couple of things you might be looking forward to on Sunday?
Well, before I get to that, there's also the uncertainty with Brock as if he does win the title, which would be very believable, of course. What, do you just say goodbye to the world title for 6 months again?
Right.
I mean that storyline is done. We're past that. I mean, to do it again, especially since he's a face now, that dynamic doesn't really work. So it kind of adds to the uncertainty. I mean, there are decent, solid reasons why Brock shouldn't get the title again.
That's my concern as well. But I think the deal has been structured a little differently. I think we'll see him in Brooklyn next month.
Oh, but after that, for SummerSlam, absolutely.
But after
definitely set for SummerSlam.
Yeah, but after that, Glenn, you bring up a good point. All right, what other things stick out for you on Sunday?
Well, first I want to see the re-coronation and continued coronation of King What's Up.
What a mess. I love Barrett, but Jesus, God.
I mean, I mean, okay, at this point, this is the year, by God, 2015, a win by Wade Barrett is meaningless. A win over Wade Barrett is meaningless. Mm-hmm. So I figure, for me personally, go with the one who's actually entertaining.
Mm, I agree. Hey, Reesh, I miss the old Mavs uniforms.
With the green?
Yeah.
They bust them out every now and then.
And I miss the M with the cowboy head on it. Pretty cool. here we go, guys. Tangent. In 1984, a self-described unemployed ice cream truck driver named Michael Larson made it onto Pressure Luck. After watching the show at home with the use of stop motion on a VCR, Larson discovered that the presumed random patterns of the game board were not random and was able to memorize the sequences to help him stop the board where and when he wanted. On the single game in which he appeared, an initially tentative Larson spun a whammy on his very first run, on his very first turn, but then played 45 consecutive spins without hitting a second one. The game ran for so long that CBS aired the episode in two parts, June 8th and 11th, 1984. In the end, Larson earned a total of $110,237 in cash and prizes, a record for the most money in cash and prizes won by a contestant in a single appearance on a daytime network game show, although the record lasted until 2006 when Vicki Ann Schrobach-Sadowski won $147,517 in cash and prizes on the season 35 premiere of The Price is Right. It still remains the record for highest single-day winnings on a series with returning champions. Of course, Price is Right does not. Although CBS investigated Larson, they determined that figuring out the patterns, although immoral, was not cheating. And
immoral?
They let him keep them. Yeah, they let him keep his winnings. The board was subsequently reprogrammed with up to 32 new patterns to help prevent other contestants from being able to memorize the board as Larson had. Blah, blah, blah. He died in 1999 of throat cancer. This is kind of neat. No, that's not neat, but I know you like that. He died of throat cancer. That's kind of neat.
Good segue.
Yeah. Game Show Network aired a special rematch edition of Whammy, the all-new Pressure Luck, which saw Michael Larson's brother come on to take on the two runners-up that got the shit beat out of him in the original episode. So that was kind of cool.
They also taught the two other people the pattern, the original pattern. I saw a documentary on it and had them try to repeat what he did, and they couldn't do it.
He was like a cyborg.
Yeah, an absolute savant. And then what choked him up at the end is he just started getting all sweaty and got thrown off. Kind of like see him start to break down at the end of the show just from fatigue.
If you go to his Wikipedia page of the actual guy, he was kind of creepy looking. Part of one game board pattern that Michael Larson memorized to squares 4 and 8 never featured a whammy. They always contained cash, and in round 2, an extra spin. And so it bounced back and forth between 4, 9. I mean, it's bonkers. The board configuration in round 2 used during episodes in which he appeared. The plus S denotes spaces that awarded. So the two slots that he always took was either 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, and an extra spin, or 500, 750, or 1,000, and an extra spin. But every other square had it, you know, in the rotation of prizes, had at least one whammy.
Except I like the fact that the last two podcasts I've been on, I've talked about a serial killer and a sociopath.
I'll give you this one suggestion. It's not related to Pressure Luck, but it's about kind of mastering.
Oh, well, then who cares?
Yeah, nobody gives a shit. Murder!
It's about mastering a game. There's a documentary called The King of Kong, A Fistful.
Oh, it's a great film.
And it's about two guys that broke the Donkey Kong record over and over again, trying to top each other. And it's such a phenomenon. It just kind of speaks to the press your luck thing of like how far people drive themselves to try to, you know, master something. The difference is they weren't doing it for money like this guy was.
Did anyone see the documentary or the independent film? It was on Netflix about the group of people that went to look for the buried E.T. games in the desert.
Yeah,
it's called New Mexico.
Atari Game Over.
Actually,
Mr. Ben Morris probably knows the guy who made it. He's like he was a Marvel writer.
Yeah, that guy got screwed.
Yeah,
if you watch that,
Ben Morris.
No, Ben.
What happened to him?
Ben Morris is a cherub. No, the guy who made the game E.T. He was like the golden child at Atari. He made the hell was that game?
The E.T. game, right?
No, before that.
Oh, God.
That was the name of the Glen. Do you remember?
Oh.
Minefield, something. I don't know. Anyway, it was a cool battle. No, Battleground? Hell in a Cell? I don't know. No, it was some cool game, and he was on top of the world. The problem was they were trying to get Spielberg's permission, and they only gave him like 3 months to make the game.
Yeah, they gave him like a week and a half to design the thing, because then they had to program it
and
produce all the cartridges and get everything out by Christmas.
And
yeah,
this was
exactly.
This was like August.
Yeah.
When they usually start in like February. And, you know,
it was like
he looked like a little
ever made. Yeah.
He looked like a little booger floating around the it was just dreadful.
His name was Howard Warshaw, was the game creator.
He had to leave the business. When Atari shut down, he had to be like real estate or something.
One of them he made was called Yar's Revenge.
That was it.
Yeah.
That game made like millions, Yar's Revenge. And he was the golden child at Atari, and then they wanted him to do E.T., except they gave him like 8 minutes to do it.
Yeah.
All right.
I apologize. It wasn't Greg Pak. It was Zach Penn. Zach Penn made a documentary called Atari Game Over.
Oh, okay.
They find the buried E.T. games.
Yeah, in a landfill in Albuquerque.
Yes.
Pretty badass, actually.
Awesome.
All right.
There's also another movie that I watched a few months ago. I believe it was called The Ecstasy of Order. It's about a Tetris tournament championship.
Really?
Yeah. That was pretty interesting with some of the people and some of their different Tetris strategies. And I'm a Tetris junkie.
I saw this one movie. It has Fred Savage in it, and it's pretty inspirational.
Princess Bride?
Is it the never-ending story?
Was it called The Wizard?
The never-ending story, like the tangent that we're on right now?
I think it was called The Wizard.
Speaking of, you know another movie I watched the other day? Labyrinth.
Ooh.
Yeah. Nobody remembers Labyrinth?
Nah, I know Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
David Bowie, Jennifer
Love Bowie, yeah.
All right, we'll finish it. Let me read this paragraph, and then we'll get back to what Reese didn't really want to talk about. After Pressure Luck, Larson became an assistant manager at local – well, no, but the last line I'm going to read to you of this is quite fitting.
Please
he became
proceed.
An assistant manager at local Walmart stores in Dayton, Lebanon, Xenia, and Bellbrook, Ohio. He also ran a promotions and marketing company, Group Dynamics Downline, out of his Lebanon home. In November 1984, Larson learned about a local radio show promotion promising a $30,000 prize for matching a $1 bill's serial number with a random number read out on the air. Over several days, he withdrew his remaining winnings in $1 bills, examined each dollar, and upon discovering he did not have the winning number, redeposited roughly half of the money. Larson left around $50,000 in his house, which would be stolen in a robbery while he was attending a Christmas party. Larson gave an interview with TV Guide in 1994, which he revealed to have called the producers of Pressure Luck after losing most of his remaining money, challenging them to hold a tournament of champions to see if he could break the bank again. They said no. In 1994, the film Quiz Show was released, and as part of the renewed discussion on game show scandals, Larson appeared on ABC's Good Morning America. By this time, he had been diagnosed with throat cancer, and his voice was noticeably weakened. Shortly thereafter, Larson got involved in an illegal scheme to sell part of a foreign lottery. As a result, he went on the run, leaving Ohio. His family was contacted by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the IRS, and the FBI, but no one knew his whereabouts till his death from throat cancer on February 16, 1999, in Apopka, Florida. A 2000 biopic was planned with this actor set to portray Larson. However, those plans fell through. You might want to take a shot in the dark who they thought would be a perfect actor to play this guy.
James Vanderbeek.
I haven't actually
The show's not over, Reese, so you know I'm not going to say it. Dope.
I haven't actually looked up his photo to see what he actually looked like, but off the top of my head, I'm going to say Richard Kind.
That's a good guess.
That's excellent.
Yeah, but Richard Kind wasn't big in 2000. Need like a...
Incorrect,
like a...
Even fun. But it wasn't going to actually look like him, but he looks like the guy that was on Sons of Anarchy that played Bobby Elvis. But Bill Murray.
Oh.
Wow.
I could see him playing a crazy...
Well, he had just done The Man Who Knew Too Little.
Yeah.
So. He was not busy at the time.
One guy who would have won Pressure Luck by ripping the board down and killing Peter Timarkin was Brock Lesnar. And imagine Brock Lesnar in a game show. My advocate, bro. Imagine Heyman answers all the things for him.
You know, if they still had the guest hosts for Raw every week.
Peter Timarkin? Oh. Where'd that guy go? So anyway, so there's your game show nerdness for the night. I mean, we know Brock and Rollins are going to have a great match because I think they're both, as much as we think Brock's all about cashing the check, going to the pay window, as the late great Dream would say, I think he does care about not having a stinker. And let's be honest, and this is me saying this, other than maybe one of the Triple H matches, he really hasn't had a stinker, per se. I guess that Big Show match.
Disagree, but okay.
Maybe that Big Show match at the 2014 Rumble.
Yeah,
that was kind of a
stinker. And also the John Cena one at Night of Champions. Didn't really feel that one either.
Yeah, that one wasn't good, and I understand that there's the injury and everything, but that Undertaker match was awful.
True. Good point.
Yeah, I'm still
okay, so Brock's 50-50 then.
I just rewatched that. I'm still torn, but we don't have time, you know. Mm. But I didn't.
So what would his best match be right now? It's two kinds of matches. His best squash was obviously with Cena last year at SummerSlam. And the other good match is obviously Punk from the SummerSlam before.
And I would also say Cena from Extreme Rules.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's JR's favorite matches.
The three-way at the Royal Rumble. You mentioned
three-way
that
at the Rumble
already.
Was good.
And three-way, the crowd was gagged.
I'd still say Punk because I think we'll never see it again.
Yeah, you're probably
right. It was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right. Am I the only one? I probably am. Looking forward to Randy Orton and Sheamus, probably.
Oh god, I was watching this past week's Raw for the first time in a long time, and when they announced that match, I realized, hey, Randy Orton is still a wrestler.
I know. We did the grades in our last show. I think Ben did Orton. Is he like truly lost in the shuffle in this whole company? What do you think, Willie? Is Randy Orton like lost?
My personal belief is that he is. I know there are people who are big fans of his, but I think the problem with Orton is that he got so much when he was so young that he's a guy like Cena who's been around since, gosh, I mean, they started up at the same time pretty much.
2002?
Yeah. Yeah. So 13 years of being in pretty much the same position. You see Cena kind of taking a step back every now and then or taking extended leaves. And Randy Orton hasn't really changed much. He's the same character. Cena's evolved, especially this year. Mm. And he, you know, completely changed his character from what he originally was, you know, with all the Thug Life stuff. And he can still deliver good matches. And I'm not against the Randy Orton Sheamus match. I think that they can have a decent, you know, above average match, especially if they just concentrate on nailing each other with strikes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they took advantage of Orton's kind of internet meme popularity a few months ago as
yes.
well as they should. Mm-hmm. He should have just been like DDP, you know, diamond cutter people everywhere.
Right. Yep.
Like the memes were showing. And, you know, they sold a t-shirt about it is pretty much what they did.
Mm.
And Cole shouted out of nowhere a lot more.
And then did nothing with it.
Right. And then he disappeared for 3 weeks and then came back to go against Sheamus. So for me, it seems like this is just one of those, okay, Sheamus has the Money in the Bank. Every year, the Money in the Bank winner has to go to the side for a little bit, lose to a bunch of people, and then get the inevitable push once he wants to cash in the bank. Cash in the briefcase, that is.
Right. Does Sheamus's briefcase affect, Glenny, the outcome of Rollins, Brock? Not necessarily saying he's going to cash in, but the prospect of it at some point now, SummerSlam or down the line, does the specter of Sheamus's briefcase affect this match Sunday? Do you think?
I am not sure that they've really made that much of an issue of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think they like having the Money in the Bank around in case, like you know, like break glass in case of emergency.
Right.
You know, if something goes wrong, it's one thing that they always have when they have it,
mm-hmm.
That they can do immediately, like
right.
at WrestleMania when they decided, you know, the plan has reached its end. We're done here. We got to do something different. So I think they might prefer longer reigns with the Money in the Bank. How much it hangs over this particular match, I don't really think it does because so much of the focus is on Rollins desperately trying to fight Brock, mm-hmm. which has, again, the face heel dynamics kind of reversed, but I guess that's what people are into now with Brock.
Mm-hmm. What do we feel about the Authority at the moment? Do you think it's finally fizzling out? Go ahead, Glenn, and then Reese.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Glenn.
I hope so, just because I'm so bored with the heel Authority figures all the time. Mm-hmm. There have been so many opportunities to have a big end to the storyline that they sidestepped or did and then reversed, like mm-hmm. the Survivor Series match. So many of those that I think the only thing that's actually going to kill it is for it to just waste away, mm-hmm. which it might be doing. Cause I mean, Triple H is a little less involved in the Rollins stuff. Like he talks to Rollins on Raw, but he's not really driving that whole thing right at the moment. Right.
Right. Right.
So it might be starting to waste away a little bit.
Okay. Go ahead, Rish.
I think there's just a deliberate sort of transparency to it where I think the Authority as an entity always hovers over the storylines, and Vince always kind of makes sure that, you know, Stephanie gets her say in this angle and that, you know, Triple H stops by, you know, in this angle to kind of like reassert his, you know, no pun intended, authority over, you know, what the main event should be. But, you know, it is weird that they kind of like angle or steer the Authority where they decide that a heel has to face a face, which makes them look like good guys. And then they kind of turn it around and they turn back into a heel faction all of a sudden for whatever storyline fits. It's kind of like a thing where they morph it depending on what the storyline is demanding based on who the face is, who the heel is, how many people are involved, and what has to balance out the storyline so that it can remain compelling. And at this point with Lesnar, I guess they've decided that having Triple H around and Stephanie around is not necessary. They can kind of keep them on the back burner, but they're going to have no fear in kind of like pulling it back out, you know, if they want to kind of reassert some sort of a feud with like a Dolph Ziggler or a John Cena, or say Ronda Rousey gets involved again at WrestleMania. I'm pretty sure they're going to, I don't think the Authority's gone. I just think that they've sort of just been put to the back burner. Mm.
I do feel like, and I don't know if a lot of people think this way, I feel like Seth Rollins has grown to the point where he can carry a Authority faction on his own and just have him and Kane break each other's balls on TV. I almost feel like Triple H can kind of sit back and Stephanie can do her little diva thing.
So you're saying he's grown as a character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That we don't really even need Triple H or Stephanie anymore. Willie, what do you think?
I agree. And to build off of what Reese said too, you know, we saw that on Monday with Stephanie coming back out and all of a sudden she's a face for one segment, despite the fact that she's been, you know, in that segment they needed. Well, they thought they needed.
Right.
Stephanie just wanted to put her fucking nose in it.
Well, totally. They
oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
We might want to talk about that, you know, a little later. But mm-hmm. I hope that it goes away. And I'm thinking that's why Noble and Mercury were kind of injured. Noble legit and Mercury pretend mm-hmm. by Brock Lesnar. And then with the Kane injury this past Monday, is that's a way of pushing that aside for a while and giving Rollins the supposed one-on-one matchup at Battleground. I still think there will be some sort of screwiness going on in that matchup to try to even up the odds. Mm. I'm hoping the Authority goes away because, like Glenn, I'm long tired of it. I don't even know the answer to this question. How long has this iteration of Triple H and Stephanie being involved in storylines been going on now? Feels like
2 years.
Yeah,
since Triple H turned heel.
Yeah, at SummerSlam 13.
At SummerSlam 13, because before that he was still, he was half and half because he was feuding with Brock. Remember they had that storyline where they thought he had like concussions and he was all like woozy and everything. Yeah. Remember that whole thing, and then that kind of vanished, you know. Go ahead, Rich.
The problem is that, you know, it's just Vince. It's Vince McMahon 101. He always, and Glenn kind of hinted at it, there's always this obsession with having some sort of overlord, you know, whether it be evil or whether it be, you know, justified. That, like, there's somebody that's kind of lording over the roster. And, you know, it's kind of like pick your poison. Would you rather old, behind the times, not, you know, a step behind Vince McMahon doing it, or would you rather a guy like Triple H and Stephanie doing it, who can kind of still work in that kind of like that sinister heelish character without being too overbearing?
Right.
I think we could use a man like Jack Tunney again.
someone
who's not like overbearing in the storylines all the time, who's just kind of a name that the commentators talk about and that the heels talk about being angry at, who makes a match occasionally, and otherwise things just go the way they do with the storylines between the wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Jack Tunney was like a real president. He gets criticized all the time, even though he never made decisions.
Time to bring back Mike Adamly.
Yes.
Yes.
I think it is the WWF office that Jeff Harvey will defend. I could hear Jack Tunney calling him Jeff
Hey,
Harvey.
I like the Scramble Challenge. That was an Adamly special.
Yeah,
the
Scrambles were good. They should bring that back. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't. I think those are awesome.
Because
I agree.
They don't want a graphic saying that what was that thing? Remember when they had the Brian Kendrick and they had the Brian Kendrick WWE champion?
That was awesome.
That was a great minute and a half of my life.
That's right. Oh, God. He could put that on his resume, technically.
And now he's trying to teach Eva Marie how to do leapfrogs.
Oh, God.
Still failing.
She's just going to porn.
Unfortunately, she's back on NXT, boys.
Well, that's the purpose of NXT, right? Train her up.
Yeah.
We'll get
good point.
This.
How about Eva Marie, Tara Brooke, Bailey,
Dana Brooke,
whatever the hell her name is. Bailey and who's another clumsy diva on NXT? And they could be like
Alexa Bliss.
Oh, Carmella or Alexa, and they could be like the four mule women.
I like Alexa though.
I think including Bailey in that group is a little much. I think she's a cut above, you know, the Eva Maries and Dana Brooks
she
of the world right now.
She could have been in that four-way back in
February.
Very slight
cut above.
Yeah.
Just a slight. Sorry.
Scott is not a Bailey guy.
I am not a Bailey guy.
Bailey.
Well,
regardless what Ben Morris
so.
Tries to brainwash me on, I am not a Bailey fan. She is slightly better than, yes, I am slightly insulting her. She is better than
like when
Eva
she's
Marie,
in
but
the matches with Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks, she's not like falling all over herself like, say, Carmella.
I think Jackie Gata was better in ring than no, I can't even say that with a straight face.
Wow.
okay. Plus, Scott, you just named as of this week the entire NXT women's division.
I know
everyone but Emma.
Yeah. Yes, Emma.
On a side note, you know, we've talked the last few years about WWE consistently going to Chicago every year for stuff. Mostly it was when Punk was there. Do you realize, as I'm looking, this is the fourth consecutive year that there has been at least one pay-per-view in St. Louis in a calendar year? Usually they like take a break, but they had
They like to hit the hometowns of their big guys, right? And that's Orton, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but
yes.
Orton wasn't even at Survivor Series.
Yeah, very weird.
Yeah, that often gets screwed up by who's on the particular shows.
Well,
but they
that's
always
true
like
too.
To hit the cities.
But yeah. Elimination Chamber 2010.
Great show.
Rumble 2012.
Mm.
Extreme Rules 2013. Last year's Survivor Series. Sunday. And then next year, Fastlane in February is there.
Wow.
So not only are they averaging one a year in that building, they're so close together. That's crazy. Usually, and I mean, obviously when Punk was here, they went to Rosemont at least once a year. But I just realized, I'm looking at the list
Well, they ought to keep going to Rosemont anyway, because that's a good town for them.
Oh, it's an awesome town.
Regardless.
Oh, I agree. I agree 100%. I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying.
I don't know if St. Louis is a good town or is just a good merch town.
Yeah, that might not be.
Must be doing something for them to keep coming back.
I've always felt that way about Atlanta. I mean, not to you know, kill on anyone in Georgia, but I've always felt that way about Atlanta. I feel like with Atlanta, they get good box office, but as a crowd, they're very ho-hum. Like, you don't always get the best crowds.
Listen to this. Many historic WWE moments have taken place at the Scott Trade Center. Former WWE and World Heavyweight Champion Kane made his WWE debut, much to the chagrin of Will, at this arena in 1997. Of course, he in the Taker Shawn Cell match.
Can I ask a question? Has it got to be Kane?
It's always got to be Kane.
Oh, okay.
Will believes it's got to be no one, but it can't be Kane. The Rock won his very first WWE championship there, Survivor Series 98. Jericho won his first world championship there at No Mercy 01. And then
That's the one with The Rock at the Alliance angle. Yes. That's a great match.
That's a fantastic match. And then their match on SmackDown, what was it, 2 weeks later, is, I think, even better.
When Rock won it back?
Yeah. I think that match might be even better. That's one to look for. There's a gem, a hidden gem to look for. The rematch between Jericho and Rock. I'm pretty sure it was SmackDown. Let me see. And then he won his last world title at the Chamber in 2010. In 2005, at this arena, John Cena was the first draft pick for Raw. Batista won his second WWE championship at that Chamber 2010. The 1,000th episode of Raw was there. Sting made his WWE debut there. I just almost pulled a laryngitis. And also at that show was the Raw the night after Owen died. So a lot of big shows in this building. The arena, alongside the Garden and Allstate Arena, is also known for having one of the best crowds, and they are big Orton guys. Apparently there's a guy that goes to every show, according to this, that has a sign that says Orton Country. So he is supported there.
Orton
Country.
Yeah.
Can I ask this? Is his arm tape getting longer the more I watch
it? I know.
I'm watching. He's going to have like the Allen Iverson elbow sleeves by the time we get to the new year.
Did you know, Willie, that the Chicago Bulls play a yearly preseason game in this building?
I did not know that.
Yes. Saw that here, too.
Do they wear the Spirits of St. Louis jerseys?
That would be awesome if they did. And, Willie, Southeastern Conference men's basketball tournament will be there in 2018. Not the Southeast Conference. The Southeastern Conference.
The SEC tournament's going to be in the Scott Trade Center. Oh, as a Southerner, I am totally against this.
Yep. Yes. The next 2 years, it's at Bridgestone. Well, it's at Bridgestone Arena in Nashville every year between next year and 2025, except twice. 2018, it's at Scott Trade Center in St. Louis, and then 2022, it's at Amalie Arena in Tampa.
They should just do it like the ACC, just keep it in Greensboro.
Well, the ACC wants to try and go into the Garden.
Well, the Big Ten beat them to it.
I'd like to see them try to pass myself with the tiki torches. Is it tiki torches? No, just regular torches. Okay.
Speaking of torches, should we discuss all the rumored 50-year-olds coming in? We're up to three now. We're up to three now.
Invasion. yes, of course. Huge rumors of who's showing up Sunday. Number one is The Undertaker. Number two is Sting, and apparently they have something to do with each other.
And the other one is Dennis Stamp.
And the other one is Dennis Stamp, who's going to fight Kane in the...
I would be more excited about that, actually.
And hanging above the ring will be Will, in that thing like Lawler was hanging over in the match between Brett and...
He's going to be on the forklift like Judy Bagwell was.
Oh, God.
Maybe if he has too many of those heart attack burgers that Justin was recommending him.
I know. By the way, we're talking about the awesome Dangerous Alliance podcast. Check it out. They're four episodes. They've had four episodes. All of them have been fantastic. Definitely check it out.
Absolutely.
Where are they going to fit? I'll ask you, Glenn. Where are they going to fit? Taker and Sting. Like, is there just going to be a random segment? Are they going to run in on one of these matches? What do you think? How are they going to fit in this show Sunday? Do they have to? Does it have to make sense? I guess not.
We've all been watching long enough to know nothing has to make sense.
That is quite true. Yes.
The only the only storyline interest that both of them have mm-hmm. are mostly centered around the title match, where Sting was doing some of his anti-authority stuff when he was fighting Triple H, and then Undertaker against Brock, obviously. Undertaker is not going to try to avenge himself against Bray Wyatt, I can tell you that.
Right.
That completely goes down the memory hole, as I've tried to put it down the memory hole since it happened, personally.
Yes.
But as I've tried to put The Undertaker down the memory hole to an extent, because if you can pretend he retired at the end of 2010, I'm much happier, but that's me.
Yes, but I concur.
But I am not sure. I'm actually talking myself into it now, because that's one way to screw with the match in a way that pops the crowd and all the fans of the 65-year-old wrestlers or whatever, and ensure that Brock doesn't actually win. If Sting tries to interfere and Undertaker tries to interfere in whatever order, I mean, it's dumb and it doesn't really make sense, but I've kind of talked myself into it now. It makes sure Brock doesn't win. It brings Sting back against the authority, kind of, and it brings Undertaker back. God, the thing about him fighting Brock, too, is because Brock is such an over face now, so the reaction to Undertaker attacking him, can he even attack a person anymore? I'm so sick of the idea of the Undertaker coming back that I'm not sure I can put together something coherent on it, frankly. But that's the only one that makes storyline sense, but I hate the idea very much, basically.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Willie?
I think, and I mentioned this in our kind of pre-show chat earlier today, I have been on this show railing against Undertaker versus Sting. I have been on blogs and, you know, as all three of you know, for the last few years, mm-hmm. saying how much I hate that matchup in 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And the irony of the fact that I'm going to SummerSlam and it may happen there makes me a little bit nauseous. And in addition to my Jervis mask, I'm going to pack a thing of Tums in my side pocket in case that match happens.
I have a crap load of Rolaids.
Is it
here,
the chewable ones?
Yes, it will be the chewable ones.
Yeah, I have a crap load of the chalky Rolaids here, so
yeah.
Throw them if you want, although I don't want to get thrown out of the thing. Rish, I mean, Sting's your boy. What do you think?
Well, it's obviously pretty rushed. Because, you know, with Triple H, they gave him a long time so that they could try to push that, even though they didn't have that many appearances by Sting until they got to, like, Fastlane. So, if they do this, you only got about 5 weeks of TV in order to, you know, in order to push this. If that's the direction that they're going in, Lord knows, they might just have Sting wrestle a younger guy, like a John, or maybe even like a John Cena, and this whole thing is just like a red herring. But it's obvious that they have plans for The Undertaker. One of them is coming off of some type of an injury.
A younger guy like Kane.
Yeah. give one of those young guys like Kane a chance. You know, I love Sting. You know, I didn't hate his match against Triple H. People have been pining for The Undertaker match. And maybe this is their way of doing it for the fans without potentially ruining WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. Because they know that if they had booked this at WrestleMania, it had the possibility of failing. Mm-hmm. So maybe SummerSlam is kind of a good, like, landing spot if they were able to convince both of them to participate. Supposedly, they were both, like, their locker rooms were, like, right next to each other, and they flew together to WrestleMania. So maybe they got a little bit of an R&R, you know. But
yeah, the thing with that is, if both of them still have functioning spinal columns at WrestleMania, they'll be there because they're going to be pulling out every person they can possibly get out of the mothballs for WrestleMania.
Sting was clearly out of shape against Triple H, and The Undertaker looked like a fucking, like, a tax agent against Bray Wyatt.
He looked bad against Bray Wyatt. He didn't look nearly as bad as he did against Brock.
He looked terrible against Brock, but that's because Brock was a much more aggressive worker. And
he had that, like, grunge 90s hairdo going on. He just looked old. He just obviously looked old.
Mm. Yeah, I was legitimately scared for Undertaker before that Brock Lesnar match. And then another year happened. And as I'm starting to learn, and Scott, you can probably talk to this too, as we're getting a little older, we're pretty close in age, like, your body starts slowing down. he's a lot older than us, and he's taking a lot more bumps than
yeah,
we ever
things
have.
Just naturally yeah. hurt. There's no, like, you know, the creaks come in whether you're in good shape or not.
Like,
so
exactly. Would it shock you if they had a good match or a bad match? Like, what would shock you more?
If they don't, absolutely. If they don't die.
Yeah,
if their spinal
too.
Columns are no longer fully fu- no.
Well, that's yeah, that's how the Undertaker's career is supposed
if
to end.
If you just let's put it this way, if you just talk pride, let's give them a little bit of credit in the sense that I don't think they'll allow themselves to put on a stinker. They know they're not. They know that there's people like you, Willie, out there who are thinking, man, they all think we're gonna fucking suck the joint out of this place. Mm-hmm. I think they know that. I don't think they're stupid. I'm gonna give maybe it's just me as eternal. You know, optimist. I'd like to think that they're not going to put on a stinker. Again, I think you have to, and I'm going to bring this up on our JR's in my next Vintage Vault, because there's a match on our next show, on our next pay-per-view that we're going to talk about that is a similar, actually involves one of these two guys, in a similar theory about how to watch a wrestling match. You're dealing with, on a match-by-match basis, different kinds of wrestlers. And there are certain people I know, certain wrestling fans, who can't wrap their heads around the fact that you have to think differently about pairs of guys. And everybody's got to wrestle like, you know, Ricky Steamboat. You know, you just can't do that. You can't.
No.
So I think, all right, let's think about it. Sting and Taker, both in their mid-40s. Taker's close to 50. I don't know if Sting's that old, but he might be that old.
Just as old, I think.
Is he close to 50? Anybody?
I believe he's in his 50s.
Okay.
Fact checking.
Do they realize, all right, how are we going to... They've obviously been talking about this, if this is what's planned for next month in Brooklyn. Do they go, look, how are we going to... Let's approach this. They obviously aren't stupid enough to give us...
Oh, shit.
They're not stupid enough to... Holy shit. Wow. I think he's older than Taker. Which would make sense. That makes sense because Taker... Well, I mean, when did Taker's career start? 88-ish? And Sting started in like 85, right? In Mid-South? Probably early 86?
We're responding to the fact Glenn checked and Sting is 56 years old.
56 years old.
Yeah, I just looked it up. I just looked it up. Sting is 56. Undertaker is 50.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense because Taker didn't start till like 88, and Sting started in like 85. So that makes sense, I guess.
And let's be honest, this isn't the end for the Undertaker.
No.
And it's definitely not the end for Sting. Like, they got more in plan for Sting in terms of a match.
I mean, we'll start talking about it, guys, when we get into December and 2016 into January. But let's be honest, Vince wants us all drinking the Jerry's House Kool-Aid by Christmas. That he's gonna get 112,000 people in that UFO, and we're gonna get, you know, Hogan Andre too, and they'll both be in their primes.
Hey, that'd be something.
That would be incredible. What I think they should do is they should get that WrestleMania the WWE game where you could bring back the WrestleMania rematches and just project it like holograms.
I keep saying it. There's only, and I sound like a broken record on the show, but there's only one match in that building that can do that, and I don't know if it's gonna happen.
And that is
Luke Harper, Eric Rowan.
Exactly. Kane and Big Show.
Okay. Former tag team partners now have to fight each other.
Rednecks explode.
Good friends, better enemies. Part 70. No. Once in a lifetime, every 3 months.
My biggest problem with... Well, I have two biggest problems. I probably have more than that with Undertaker and Sting, but between the two entrances, which is really what people are going to be looking for, you know, the entrances are going to be incredible. You add those up, you add however many minutes they're going to get in the ring together, which is going to have to be a lot because it has to be slow to give them time to recover after each move. And you're talking 30, 40 minutes of any card.
Mm-hmm.
And if you went down the roster right now, I probably could tell you that, you know, 20 guys at least between the NXT and the main roster that I would rather see in the ring for 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah, that's time that's not going to go to the New Day if the New Day still exists.
But the important part, Steve, is are you in the minority of that opinion? Do most fans would rather see younger guys?
Quite possibly. Quite possibly I am in the minority. But
it
I will
might
toot
be,
my minority horn.
It might be – I'm in complete agreement with Steve, by the way. It might be a majority of fans who watch week to week or keep up with it week to week like we do. But the casuals, they're, you know, for WrestleMania, of course, it's the whole festival atmosphere. We've talked about it before, that they're trying. They've got us. They're trying to get the people who remember, oh, The Undertaker, I liked him in the 90s. Oh, Sting, I liked him in the 90s. They're together now?
All right. Great discussion, guys. All right, before we go to break, let's go around the horn quick. R-Truth versus King Barrett. Glenn.
Truth.
Willie.
I'd say Truth. It'd be fun.
Anyone who doesn't watch it is the winner.
That's boo. And that's everybody. Okay.
Barrett. You got a plunger for a scepter.
Little Jimmy gonna get his crown. Roman Reigns, Bray Wyatt. Willie.
Oh, Roman. Unless they're going to go to some screwiness for SummerSlam, but probably Roman.
Reesh.
Bray Wyatt.
Really? Okay. Glenn?
He needs.
Roman. They're still building him back up.
Okay. Primetime players, New Day, tag team titles. Glenn?
New Day. I think with this time they're going to have the numbers advantage again. I think they're going to go right back to that. I think primetime players have been prime beneficiaries of Tyson Kidd's injury, but I think they're going to go back to New Day and try to do that formula with a different team. It might be the primetime players again. It might be the Lucha Dragons. I would hope it would be the Mega Powers, but I think they're going to do that same New Day formula with another face team.
Reesh?
New Day win it back.
Willie.
New Day win it back, though my second favorite moment this past month on WWE television, number one was Cena Cesaro. Number two was Titus O'Neil on commentary throwing shade at JBL.
Bitch slapping JBL.
Oh, yeah. I loved every minute of it. I have a master's degree. How many degrees do you have?
He just hit me maggle. Cena Owens for the United States title. Reesh.
Owens wins the U.S. belt.
Willie.
This hashtag original Steen fan says Owens.
It's me. I agree. Glenn?
Make it a complete, all of us. Yeah, I'm going to say Owens, and I'm interested to see how they vary up the style of the match.
Okay. I'm sorry. That wasn't meant to cut you off. I was agreeing with you. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Because in the second match, like Scott, you and the guys on the reaction show, very aptly pointed out, Cena was the one to change his style going into that match, which going into, you know, 10 years of the Cena era is significant. But I want to see after Owens lost how he's going to change his style, if he's just going to be he's just going to be angrier, or if his moveset, if his style is going to adjust.
We want to see that power driver, Willie.
Oh, I know.
We want to see that.
It's not going to happen.
Oh, they're going to keep teasing it forever, but it's not coming.
It's going to be awesome. Okay, my match of the night, 5 stars for Randy Orton versus Shane. I'm sorry, I can't. No, I'm hoping it's going to be a good match. I like both guys. Willie.
The Money in the Bank curse. I have to go Orton in his hometown. I hope they just clubber each other.
That's what I hope, too. Reesh?
Orton.
Glenn.
Probably Orton. I hope it's better than their other matches that come to mind.
Oh, they've had so many boring matches. No offense to them, but they've had some bad
going ones. Going all the way back to right after Sheamus won the title the first time. Their match at the Rumble was horrible.
They almost put Barclays to sleep after WrestleMania 29.
Well, that's when. Well, no, they didn't go to sleep. They went bonkers.
Yeah,
they got drunk. All right, Rollins, Brock, Glenn.
Ooh. I think there's going to be some screwy finish and Rollins gets away with it.
Reesh.
I don't know who wins, you know, disqualification or whatever the hell, but Rollins keeps the title.
Okay. Reesh?
Lesnar wins ... by disqualification.
I'm completely flummoxed about what they're going to do.
Yes! I've always wanted somebody to use flummoxed other than me on this show. Thank you, Willie. One of my favorite words ever.
Can we talk about the formatics as well?
That's a great word too, Glenn. And the histrionics.
I honestly don't know. which I'm happy about. I'm glad I don't know. I like to be surprised. That's what's fun about wrestling. It's not fun when you're not surprised. I think Rollins retains for one more time. It, like, my gut says, you know, Brock wins, destroys him, but like, why at Battleground? You think they would do it on a bigger stage. So Rollins retains the title. Maybe I like Risha's thought of a disqualification.
Okay. All right. There is your preview of Battleground here on Main Event. The show will take place Sunday in St. Louis, and in a couple weeks we'll delve into it and get you ready for SummerSlam in Brinklin, where Willie and I will be dressed to the nines with tuxedos. What do you think, Willie? Tuxedos? You wear the Jervis mask. I wear the Becky Lynch goggles, but we're in tuxedos. Kind of like when the Executioners win awards and stuff like that. Really cool. Interesting. We'll take a break here on Main Event. Be back after this.
Be guns.
I like the tuxedo idea.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner, at least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and placetobenation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only, Place to Be Nation, Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's tag teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Welcome back. Episode 39 of the main event. I'm Scott Criscoli. Steve Williams, Reesh, Glenn Butler. PlaceMination.com, your home for everything pop culture. My PIC, Mr. Rosero, and I are doing our Vintage Vault refreshes. And today, In Your House, number one. Guilty pleasure. I'm not going to lie. I enjoyed that show, till the main event anyway. But check it out. Jay Martell with A Boy Can Dream, top 10 movies Marvel needs to make. And since we always do this on the show, and I love his writing on our site, let's take a look at the top 10 movies Marvel does need to make. Let's see. What was the last thing we did? Oh, that was the Schwarzenegger characters. Okay. Beta Ray Bill.
The one that didn't have Conan on it.
Yes. No, it did have Conan. It was just like eighth. Yeah,
Conan was like number 16 or something.
Yeah. Beta Ray Bill. Dark Hawk. Mephisto. Really? That would be cool. Long Shot, Omega Red, and honorable mention. Oh, these are all the honorable mentions.
Okay.
Oh, Namor, the Submariner. I'd love a movie with him.
Well, Namor's got it for Sue Richard, so there's a tie-in right there.
There you go. All right, here were his number 10, Axe of Vengeance, which I guess was a bunch of heels, looks like. Doc Ock. Not Doc Ock. Dr. Doom, Kingpin, Red Skull. I love Red Skull. Loki, and a couple other guys.
So it's like the Sinister Six, only more dysfunctional.
Yes. Number 9, Night Stalkers. 8, Excalibur. 7, Planet Hulk. I like Planet Hulk. Number 6, Adam Warlock. 5, Cable/X-Force. And 4, Sinister Six. 3, Dark Phoenix Saga. 2, Silver Surfer. As Silver Surfer versus Galactus. And the number 1, I will not tell you. If you want to know what number 1 is, go to PlaceMination.com. Check out Jay Martell's piece.
Spoiler, he did an entire piece about movies Marvel needs to make. Not one mention of Black Widow.
No.
What about Howard the Duck?
That too, seriously.
Jim Thompson.
That's twice tonight, Reach. Aaron George has this great alternative, Ring of Honor TV, his Ring of Honor TV recap. The PlaceMination staff did the newest What If. Their thoughts of who the NWO's third man would be if it wasn't Hulk Hogan. Check that out. Glenny Bunn, your walk around the web. Anything you want to tease?
Well, the main thing from that was, and the main thing people have been talking about the last couple of days is Pluto. We know what it looks like now.
It's blue, isn't it?
Actually, no. It's reddish.
I thought it was cold. Damn it.
It is cold. There are ice mountains there. There might be ice volcanoes.
That's kind of cool. There's an ice volcano and a war with Ring of Honor. No.
anyway, that's not cool.
Check out Glenny Bunn's walk around the web. Tremendous today.
Please do.
Newest episode of Titans of Wrestling. Parv, Pete, and Johnny. NWA President Bruce Tharp comes back, as well as Kevin Sullivan to talk that NWA Classics on demand. I looked it up, guys. I think it's $10.99 a month for that stuff. It's all that Paul Bosch stuff.
Did you read the story that one of the executives for WWE got fired because they didn't bid hard enough for it?
No.
Yes. Like, it was really? A woman who had worked with the company since 1995, and her bid for Paul Bosch's tape library, they didn't get it, and the NWA On Demand service got it, and she got fired.
Well, it's not like she was playing with her own money. I would have overbid for it, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Especially
Russell Sellers,
considering that they've been collecting like the entirety of wrestling history.
I know. They'll get it eventually. When nobody signs up for that and they got to make back their money, they'll sell it to them. Sellers points, DCU round 2, Bayless with his Raw rundown from this past Monday, and down the hall, the Kevin Kelly Show had the Patriot, Del Wilkes. So check it out. Placement, and they do their preview for Battleground as well. PlaceMeNation.com. Your home for what? Everything. Pop culture. All right, guys.
Can I quickly offer my pick for Marvel movie that needs to be made? Miss Marvel. If anyone, Ben did not put me up to this, and we usually don't talk Marvel comics when Ben's on. You know, conflict of you know, two jobs.
Yep, I know.
Miss Marvel, absolute must read. If you haven't read comic books in years, it is a must read. It is quite possibly my favorite comic book of the last decade.
And if anyone hasn't read them, all of the Star Wars titles this year on Marvel have all been awesome, including what just came out as an episode, as an issue one of Lando. Have you seen the cover?
Excellent.
Have you seen the cover, Willie?
Yes, I have.
Oh, my God. It's so awesome. Have you seen it, Glenn?
Yeah, I saw that cover. That was pretty cool.
Oh, my God. I love it.
I hate the detour again, but Scott, I don't think I ever got your thoughts on the new trailer for Star Wars that came out from the Celebration show. It amazed me.
I didn't see the new trailer, actually.
Oh, wow.
I saw...
Have you seen the Comic-Con reel?
Well, I saw the Comic-Con reel. That I saw.
The trailer came out in April during the Celebration show they had.
Oh, is that the second one where it goes,
yes,
we're home? Oh, I did see that. I did see that one. Yes, I got it.
Did you cry?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
It's the Falcon, man. It's my ship. I posted my picture from 1981.
There are literally YouTube mashups of people crying when Han Solo and Chewie show up at the end.
Because it's Han and Chewie. Was my guy. He was my favorite. He's my favorite Star Wars guy of all time.
I honestly, Batman, Superman, and Comic-Con didn't really do it for me. You know, Marvel is kind of resetting everything with their new phase because they emptied the guns with Avengers so that they didn't have anybody at Comic-Con. I cannot wait for Star Wars Episode 7.
I absolutely cannot either. No. What a fall it's going to be for movies. For movies in the fall, you've got in the span of 7 weeks, you've got Spectre, which is the newest James Bond,
looks
out November 6th,
directed by Sam Mendes.
Yep. Him and the best part is him and Daniel Craig have one more movie together, so we'll see what happens after this. And then November 28th is Creed, newest Rocky movie.
Don't bury Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2. That's the last one.
Okay.
I like that one. Come on, man.
I don't read the books. Aren't they chick books? No, I'm
not Hunger Games.
No, I know.
Fault in Our Stars is a chick book, not Hunger.
And of course, December 18th, I will be. Or be more like December 17th at 11 o'clock at night. My brother and I will be somewhere in central Connecticut, probably close to you, Glennie, watching, seeing episode.
I watched every prequel
I watched the midnight showing the night before. I literally remember for Phantom Menace, which was 1999, I sat in the last seat. I was at the showcase in central part of the state. And North Haven, Glenn knows where I'm talking about.
You know the
theater I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Literally the last seat on the front row in the corner. I almost was on the floor for Phantom Menace.
The day that Phantom Menace opened, I got my parents. I was a freshman in high school at the time. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
I was four years out of college at that point, but anyway.
I got my parents to let me get out of school early to see the first showing in the afternoon. They would not let me go to midnight. I think my brother went to midnight because he was out of college by then. And so my dad picked me up from school. I remember waiting in first period biology, looking at my watch every like 30 seconds, waiting until I could get out of school to go see Star Wars.
Yeah.
And then it was The Phantom Menace.
Yep. And then I remembered I saw the midnight of Attack of the Clones and the midnight of Revenge of the Sith, and those were not as packed.
Well, Scott, what Scott's not telling you is that he started out on the floor watching it. He wound up back on the floor after watching Phantom Menace because it was so bad. He was suffering from depression.
Yes.
So how many midnights outside of the Star Wars? You'd say like five midnight shows you've done?
Oh, I've done more than that. I've done
more than that. Wow.
Every Batman.
I've only done one.
I've done every Batman. I did both Supermans, A Man of Steel, and the one with Brandon Routh. Or Ruth, whatever, however you say his last name.
It's the way they say it in TED. Brandon Routh.
Jesus.
I love midnight shows. I hit Two Towers and Return of the King at midnight. Best midnight show I was ever at was Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, I did all three Spider-Mans. The fourth one was
the only one I did because I got a free ticket for it was Transformers.
Good grief.
But it makes it fun.
The Hulk movie is the only time I've went to a midnight movie. Never again.
Not the Ang Lee
movie. The Ang Lee one?
Oh, the Ang Lee one, yep.
Oh, Jesus, Willie. People. Are you out of your mind?
God, what is wrong with you?
That was terrible.
I had people who were going.
I did the Ed Norton.
I pretty much fell asleep in the long opening scene.
I did the midnight for the Ed Norton.
You were better off watching Green Lantern at midnight.
I did both. I did the first Captain America. I haven't seen the second one. I didn't see Winter Soldier.
You have not seen
Winter Soldier? Have to.
Yeah, I know. No, I know I do. I know I do.
Give me back your fan card, please.
I have a core group of friends who always go. Like tonight, they went to the 8:30 Ant-Man.
Yeah, tonight. I was just going to say, on behalf of Ben Morse, go see Ant-Man.
Yep. I was going to – if I hadn't seen the Eagles last night and we were recording Wednesday night, I would have gone to Ant-Man tonight. But the Eagles are more important and you guys are more important. So.
That's sweet. Aww. We are currently in negotiation between my 8-year-old and my wife whether he can go and see Ant-Man. He really wants to go see it. It's PG-13. There are negotiations going on.
I'm sure it's fine.
My wife refused to let my 4-year-old watch the Avengers Age of Ultron. Refused.
Age of it. Well, I would say, Willie. I mean, Reesh.
I want an honest opinion here. Can a 4-year-old be allowed to watch this movie?
No, I don't think so.
Little violent.
See, I debated. I tried hard, but I knew I wasn't going to win.
It might be a little violent.
Yeah.
I mean, there's obviously no nudity or any of that kind of jazz, but
for selfish,
little violent.
For selfish purposes, you know.
I know.
Bring him along.
Give him a couple years, and then.
I knew I was fighting a losing battle, unlike the Avengers Age of Ultron.
Well, they're going to do a second one of those Blu-ray box sets, that Ultimate, the Avengers Assemble, that 10 Blu-ray set with the...
Well, the summer movies are so sophisticated. Like, even Jurassic World is too scary for kids. Mm-hmm. Like, Jurassic World scared me when I watched it.
You know? I didn't see it.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Anyway, yes, Ant-Man, a bunch of my friends went to... oh, you know what? You know where I've seen... again... Glenn and I are about to get Connecticut dork, so you two can hold off a minute. You know where I've seen most of my midnights, Glenn? The Trumbull.
I used to go to Trumbull all the time. I've been going to Milford at the mall.
Oh yeah, I go to a lot of those there too. Yeah, but before that was really nice. I used to go to the Trumbull one, or the one down here in Sono. That's usually where I see my two my most of my midnights.
Yeah, all through the late 90s, early 2000s, I was at that Trumbull Theater, like, most every weekend. It was ridiculous for a
Actually,
while.
You know what? Star Trek 3. Both Star Treks I saw midnights for, by the way.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Spider-Man 3.
The latest ones, yeah.
Yeah, the Star Trek, I did it again. Spider-Man 3 I saw in Stratford.
The
one that's no longer.
Yeah, they just shut down that because the town needs another gym, I guess.
Well, it's like we were supposed to get a Popeyes down here because I think their chicken is better than KFC. But Norwalk is now getting its 88th liquor store because that's all we need is more shitty liquor stores.
Oh, cool. Hey,
you need liquor stores and gyms. You know, you got to keep up the leather.
You need people to go to liquor store after going to the
after
gym.
After going to the gym.
you need liquor stores and gyms, and Popeyes is up in Milford, so.
Oh, yes, near the mall, correct.
Yeah.
A lot of 60-year-old white women who are trying to keep up appearances, you know.
And anyway, guys, how about wrestling?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. All right, anyway, PlayStation.com, everything pop culture. Glenn and I will do the Best of Connecticut show, which Justin will not come on because he despises this state. Hey. Anyway, okay. So let's go to something real quick. WWE.com today announced their 10 best matches of the first half of the year. I will announce, I'll give the 10, and then Mr. Willie, the floor is yours. Number 10 was the John Cena, Sami Zayn, U.S. title match from Raw on May 4th. That was a superb match. Number 9, Rollins versus Ambrose from Money in the Bank.
Love that match.
Very good match. A lot of people thought it was a little long.
Yep, a little long.
I thought it had to be that long to prove.
Really? Okay.
So that they could prove that they could do it.
Number 8, Neville and Jericho from Tokyo.
Very, very good match.
Great match, yes.
Very smarmy heel Jericho, too.
Yes.
And very geared towards Japanese crowd with two guys who fought a lot in Japan.
Yes, definitely. Number 7, Brock and Roman Reigns from WrestleMania. know if I mean I like that match a lot.
I wouldn't go that high.
Yeah, I don't know if I would either.
For a WWE list, they're going to have the main event of WrestleMania on there, no matter what it is.
They kind of have no choice. You're right. No, you're right, Glenn. Number six, Daniel Bryan versus Dolph Ziggler for the IC title from the March 30th Raw.
I would debate that one, too.
Yeah.
Is that the one that Daniel Bryan basically, is that the one that wiped him out for good?
I think so.
From all those crazy headbutts?
No, I thought that was a match he had with Sheamus on SmackDown that week.
Yeah, it was right after that, but he did have a bunch of headbutts like in a row against Dolph in this match, which was very
odd. And like at WrestleMania as well.
Yeah.
For two guys with a history of concussions.
Yeah.
Right.
Look at two bash heads with one another. This is awesome.
Yeah. Number five. Awesome. Number five, John Cena versus Cesaro.
Well deserved.
From the Raw from...
any of them.
This past week. A week ago.
I
could argue that it's my number one right now.
It's the one from the 13th.
Yeah.
So no, it was this past week.
Yep. And I could argue that would be my number one of the year.
I think they have that date wrong. I think they mean last week.
The 6th.
I think you're right, too.
It was July 6th.
No. Yeah.
Number four, Owens versus Balor from Tokyo, which was, I thought, a tremendous match.
That was a very, very good match.
Tremendous match. Number three, Charlotte versus Sasha versus Bayley versus Becky Lynch from
great match.
Rival.
There's other ones I would pick instead of it.
Yes, I know. Absolutely. I know one as well. We'll get to that.
Yep.
Number two was Cena versus Owens from the Elimination Chamber. That match was fucking incredible.
You can't argue that.
And the number one, according to WWE.com, the number one match, Kane versus Big Show. Mm-hmm. On Superstars. No, I'm only kidding.
Can't argue that.
Kane versus Big Show would not be on Superstars.
Number one was a match I can proudly say I was at, and that is Brock Lesnar versus John Cena versus Seth Rollins from the Royal Rumble. I thought that match was absolutely fantastic. Not the best match of the weekend I saw live. The best match that night I saw live was Ring of Honor the night before, which was, if I can remember the teams again, ACH, Cedric Alexander, and...
Was it Seidel?
Seidel against Styles and the Young Bucks.
Yeah.
Holy fucking shit, that match was incredible. And I'll put in $20 in the...
There are three matches this year with AJ and the Young Bucks versus some assortment of Ring of Honor or New Japan guys that absolutely, like, tear the house down.
How is Sasha versus Becky not on this list?
I just watched Sasha wrestle Charlotte again on NXT. I could put that on this list.
That was also a very solid match. Totally. Mm.
Her finish is the bank statement, which is like, you know, it's like a cross, kind of like a cross face. You know how some people look at it and they always complain, well, it doesn't look like the fingers are locked. Doesn't look like she's wrenching. Sasha Banks wrenches this in on Charlotte. Charlotte looks like a square by the time she taps out.
So there's your top 10, Willie.
Well, one of the things I would like to do if we have the time is, you know, we started to talk about it now, but kind of rebook our top 10 here and see if there's anything we would want to take out, anything we would like to put in, anything we'd like to move around. Because like I said, I could argue John Cena versus Cesaro much higher on there. We've definitely talked about Sasha Banks versus Becky.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe better, definitely better than the four-way. Do we keep the four-way in? Do we take it out? So my question for you guys is, what matches would you take out? Are there any matches they're missing?
I would take out that four-way women's match from NXT, from TakeOver Arrival was good, but I like Becky versus Sasha from the last NXT special. I thought that match was better.
I thought
that match was incredible.
I think the Cena Owens Elimination Chamber match was incredible. The Cena Owens match at Money in the Bank was just as incredible, I think. And I think really deserves to be on here. I personally would take out Bryan versus Ziggler. I would take out the triple threat match from the Rumble as well. And it hasn't been as memorable for me. I know Scott, you were there, and I know a lot of people love that match. It wasn't as memorable for me. And I think for the sake of the Cena Owens match and the Becky Lynch match, and maybe even for the triple threat, on Raw this week, Cesaro versus Owens versus Rusev, was a great match that I think also for the half year plus a couple of weeks deserves to be on here.
Okay.
What do you think about getting rid of the Cena-Zayn match? And I love Sami Zayn. He's my favorite wrestler. And that
it's too short.
And the moment of him coming out was incredible. Like, I can tell that I'm excited about something when I stand up while I'm watching it, and I was standing up because they kept teasing him coming out. And that part of it was incredible. But the match itself between Zayn's injury and, you know, like, Cena kind of working this new style. This was one of the first matches where he did that.
Mm-hmm.
And I can think of a few matches. I think the Neville one was better than the Sami Zayn match.
Like the Neville one.
Both Cesaro matches, both Owens matches for Cena, you know, better than that. I think the triple threat, definitely better than that.
I'll make two cases. I would take out Bryan Ziggler. I would put in Finn Balor and Neville from NXT TakeOver Rival.
Yeah,
if you want to know how great NXT TakeOver Rival was, which was, I think, the February show, that had three matches that might wind up on this list, because Owen Zayn from that one was pretty great too, but I just couldn't put it in here. And
yeah, the thing against any of the Owen Zayn stuff is that they were more angles than matches, like extended beatdowns, I mean.
Yeah.
So in the list of best matches, I think that those kind of fall away.
And I would probably take out the main event of WrestleMania, and I'm going to really throw a curveball. I would put in Ethan Carter III and Rockstar Spud in a hair versus hair match that was on Impact about 2 months ago.
That's getting a lot of buzz, but great, we're keeping it to the WWE matches, though, too. Because
really great, intense match. I think it was in England, so they were killing for Spud in this match, and Ethan Carter III, I thought that was his coming out party as like a really good in-ring performer. TNA has taken its lumps for sure, and some are deserved, but I thought that was like their highlight of the year.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a ton of Ring of Honor matches, but I wanted to really
compare
the WWE.
Jay Briscoe from the most recent pay-per-view, right?
You know what I bet, Glenn? I bet on TV. Now, I haven't watched the show on TV. From TV. I was there. I can see I don't think you're the only one who thinks that triple threat didn't seem as juicy on the screen as it did in the building.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Pretty much everything seems better being there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I tell you, the heat during the Rumble match, as friggin' dreadful as the ending was, still had juice in the building. It was on TV because those were tapings. I want to put that six man in here. If we're going, are we talking outside the box?
If we're going outside the box,
I want that six man in there.
I think it's straight WWE just because that was their hap list. But right. There's a lot of stuff that I would take in there too.
Steve Willie, if you could put any Wrestle Kingdom 9 pit match in there, would you willingly do it here? What was that match? It was Ibushi versus it Nakamura?
Nakamura and Ibushi.
And then there's the main event of Tanahashi and Okada.
Yeah, I like the Ibushi, and I know there's some Ibushi haters out there, and I think part of it is because he does a lot of flips and because they don't like the way he looks. But Nakamura Ibushi, I talked with Chad about this a while ago from last year, from 2014. That was my favorite match of the year. I caught that on the Access TV show.
And there's no Chad Campbell today, but I've heard that the match in which AJ Styles won the title back from Tanahashi is incredible.
Right.
That was about, I think that was February.
So in terms of WWE matches, what would be, it sounds like Glenn, you're Cena Owens, but which one?
Oh, if it's my list, I'm keeping both on there.
Yeah. Which are your favorite though?
I'd have to rewatch them because I'm still stunned at some of the moves that Cena pulled out at the Money in the Bank match. I was literally moved to the edge of my couch screaming, "Are you fucking kidding me? Did Cena just do the Canadian Destroyer?" Yeah, which it turns out was actually the code red, but whatever. But yes. I was literally screaming. So that, just for those moments, and there were a couple others as well that he pulled out, just incredible moments in an incredible match. In my memory, as it is right now, I'd have to put that number one.
Scott, now, top 10 list is great, but what's your best match?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So, oh yeah, Scott, what's your number one? I think we might all come up with different ones right here.
I absolutely think so.
I think my number one is... Cena Owens from the Chamber.
Reesh, what about you?
Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch.
There's a lot of people.
Oh, I love that match.
I know Will is been. I think that's still his number
one. It's not grading on a curve because they're girls and they work so hard.
That match doesn't need the curve.
It does not need the curve. Absolutely right.
Hitting match.
The thing I really liked about it too was that they, some of the New Japan matches I've knocked on this. They'll like really work a body part hard, right? And then like they'll work the leg, and then that person will come back and use like a million drop kicks using the leg that it's been worked on for 15 minutes. They each worked their arm, and then they didn't do some of their normal moves that would use the arm. And then Sasha ended up winning, starting at is that a divorce court that's called, that's off the top rope that she did to smash the arm and then get her in the.
Is that what would be considered strong style, or is that just kind of a normal psychology?
I'm not a total expert on that, but that was kind of – that would be strong style, you know, for a women's standpoint, I would believe.
Yeah. Well, it's boss style. That's what I call it.
It's Sasha Banks style. That was great. So in my number one, I think I would stick with Cena Cesaro. I think that second match that they had last Monday that was over half an hour, full disclosure, I was watching it in a YMCA surrounded by a lot of people, and I had to contain my shouting and, you know, getting up like Glenn did when he did the code red and screaming obscenities when Cesaro raced around half the ring to deliver.
You were at the YMCA at 10 o'clock at night?
No, in the morning. It was in the morning. Son was in his preschool.
Young man. Just
thank you.
And we didn't get Glenn's though, I think, huh?
Oh no, we did. Mine was the Cena Owens from Money in the Bank.
He took one, and
so
I took
you
the
took
other.
A Cena Owens, and he took a Cena Owens.
And I took a, except we
John,
took different ones.
John Cena is in three of the four matches for the best that we picked
because he's a great wrestler.
Yeah,
and
seriously,
the Cena haters can suck a duck.
And he is
the half of every crowd that still chants that he sucks.
Was there a point recently or way in the past where that turned for you, Scott? Where you said, you know what? Fuck the character. Cena is just a great wrestler. We need to learn to accept.
Yes. Andrew. Probably. Probably 2013. Okay. I would say.
Oh, pretty recent.
Yeah, I would say after the Rock feud ended, and after those two shitty matches with Ryback, which really totally wasn't his fault, I would say his match with, no, you know what, even further, 2011, the matches with Punk. Those were not Punk carry jobs, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Money in the Bank, some of those three straight months, Money in the Bank, SummerSlam, and oh no, I always do that. He fought Punk. He fought Cena at Clash at Money at
at the Clash.
I almost said Clash of the Champions. Night of Champions 12, not Night of Champions 11. I always get
that
confused.
That's a great one, but the Raw one is the blowaway match. If you ask,
The Raw match at in February of 13.
Yes,
yes, that match is awesome. I would say probably 2011 when he started wrestling Punk.
You know,
I think from that point.
You know what it was for me? It was in 2012, because I felt like in like 2010 and 2011, even though he had the great match with Punk, I felt like he sort of lost it and that he was on the way down. And it was almost like Jordan when he kind of got his groove back, you know, after getting back from baseball. And I felt like John, you know, in 2012 when he had the matches with Brock, he had the matches with Punk, he had the match with Ziggler. I felt like, okay, he's found his second win. He's got it back, you know. And even though the character is poorly booked and incredibly stale, I kept saying to myself, this is probably either the best wrestler on the roster or one of the five best wrestlers on the roster.
Mm.
And then it's really been, for me, in terms of character-wise, starting with the Lesnar feud when they allowed him to get thrown around, you know, so much by Lesnar with, you know, the 16 German suplexes. And then with this U.S. title run right here has been, I think he'd have to be a unanimous pick for MVP of the company so far this year.
Is this the best stretch he's ever had?
Wrestling wise, I think so. Maybe when he started a little bit, but that's kind of dim for me.
There's this 2007 championship run. Yeah, that was a really stellar time.
Are we talking about Cena?
Yes. Yeah.
The Rumble match with Umaga.
That was great. That was amazing.
Matches with Umaga. There was the whole feud with Shawn Michaels. There was the four-way at Backlash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what's lost about Shawn and then the match at WrestleMania and then the one in London? Everybody was making it that, you know, because Triple H got hurt, that Shawn stepped up his game and he was so great. I thought John Cena was right with him.
Oh, if not better. Totally.
And then, you know, Shawn goes down. And then he's feuding with a Khali and had the best match Khali ever had. He wrestles Bobby Lashley, who was molasses. You know, I mean, he was absolutely.
You got to go with molasses, huh?
What's that?
Yeah,
Bobby Lashley.
That match with Lashley was an achievement, and I kind of liked Lashley, but his match with Cena was batting far above his level.
Oh, I was pumped for that feud. Before I realized what a schmuck Lashley is,
well,
I was digging that. I remember watching that with JR in Rhode Island. We were watching it together. I remember that Bash 07 match, and I even said, you know, this actually isn't half bad. And I was for some reason had an odd feeling that they were going to have that Lashley was going to win the title that night. I don't know why, but I mean, for Vince to want to get involved in a storyline with Lashley, I thought that there was some doings there.
Yeah.
And
he was pushing him hard.
This U.S. title run is right with it. I mean, he's on fire.
And then it kind of the next couple years kind of bandied back and forth. 08 and 09,
because after he lost the title, had to give it up when he was injured at the end of 07, he spent large swaths of 08 and 09 losing to the people he beat in 2007. He lost to Orton. He lost to Triple H. She lost a freaking JBL.
And, yeah, that was getting back from the 05.
Yeah, exactly. He lost to the Big Show. He
lost to a light stand.
Yes, he lost to Edge. There were so many people that he, you know, gave the job back to. For a guy whose reputation is, whoa, he always wins. But of course, in contrast to you guys, I've always been on the Cena train, so. One man's perspective.
But what we're saying is that with the work rate he's been putting in, I think more people are on the Cena train now than ever before.
Sure, except for half the crowd at every show.
I think the Cena sucks, let's go Cena stuff has now just become part of the you know, occasion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like I said before, I mean, it's cool to chant and it's what people do now.
Right. And part of the intrigue is seeing who will beat Cena for the title. That's part of the intrigue of this whole storyline and how well that has been booked, and that there's been a few guys who have come so close, like Neville and Cesaro. Both of them had Cena pinned and needed, you know, interference from someone else. You know, Rusev on one, and then Owens in the first Cesaro match to stop it from happening.
Mm-hmm.
So when it does happen here, and yeah, Cena has lost to Owens. I mean, that was a huge shock. The only negative to Cena this year is how the Rusev feud was booked those last couple matches with the...
Yeah, the last several matches with Rusev were not good.
Well, that feud just went way too long, and Rusev's pretty much now officially useless.
That feud, well, I think that triple threat match, and I'll see how the match, you know, with Cesaro on SmackDown, if anyone watches SmackDown, turns out, but to try to rescue Rusev going forward. But Yeah, that feud with Cena went south as soon as Rusev's entrance was over at WrestleMania. That was the obvious peak.
Then they tried to recreate the 70s show emergency in the...
Yes.
Strap match or chain match.
So there you go. Nice job, Willie. I think we all... that'd be a good main event topic for the future. The evolution of John Cena.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sign me up for that.
That's a good topic. I think we should, yeah.
Evolution
I think we need
more
than...
Well, he has Jason Kidd syndrome. He has Jason Kidd syndrome. He always looks the same, so it's hard to really judge him from one era to another because you're always looking at him and saying, it's the same John Cena. Like, even Randy Orton, body type-wise, has definitely changed. You know, he's a little... Can I say fatter? Would that be fair?
Well, let's put it this way. He's gone through multiple... Like, he was beefy in, like, from 03 to, like, 08-ish. And then from 08 to, like, 13, he was, like, almost, like, you know, Starvin' Marvin on South Park.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's back to being kind of old beefy.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
age
he's in his late 30s. I think even he knows the twilight's coming. And he's fighting against it, like he says in the commercial, you know?
Yep. Another top 10 list, guys, I was looking at here on WWE.com that I thought would be interesting to talk about. This is from... Oh, this is recent. It's only from early June. The top 10 most famous fans in sports entertainment history. In terms of, like, people in the crowd that they've caught on camera. Number 10 was the Brock Lesnar guy. Remember when he debuted the night after WrestleMania 28 and there was that guy that looked like Stifler from American Pie who did the rip thing the minute that...
He does the tugboat. He does.
He easily looks like Stifler. There's no doubt. He easily looks like
Stifler. He's probably as dumb as Stifler, too.
Number 9, a guy by the name of John Bailey. Anybody know who John Bailey is?
No.
No.
No one?
I know the former NFL player Champ Bailey.
Nope.
Track star Donovan
John Bailey. Nope. John Bailey is ECW's straw hat guy.
Oh, the hat guy should be higher than that.
The hat guy with the Hawaiian shirt who was at King of the Ring 95. Poor bastard. Number 8. Do we all remember November 2010 when The Miz cashed in his money in the bank on Randy Orton and there was pissed off Miz Girl.
Miz Girl, absolutely.
Give her credit. Her name is... Did they get her name? Kaylee?
They gave her name when they gave her the slammy.
Yes.
I think it was just Kaylee. Did they give her last name? No, her name was just Kaylee. I don't see her.
That is the human version of the Grumpy Cat.
Yep. Good for her. That's legit. Number... What number would this be? Number 7? Watch enough WCW and WWE events from the 1990s. You're bound to come across this exuberant enigma. Mushroom-shaped hair. Oh, yeah, the big dude with the... He was like this big fat dude with like a... He always wore like a green polo shirt, and he like would always jump into the middle of the crowd. He was at WrestleMania 12, and he was on camera when Warrior beat Triple H in 16 seconds. And he apparently was on camera when Eddie Guerrero and DDP fought at Halloween Havoc 96. So apparently a well-known, big, you know, husky fan who would stick his head on the camera. Another memorable guy, and I know there's a picture of him here. Does anyone know who his real name is? Lenny Bonfiglio, otherwise known as Faith No More Guy.
Ooh.
Remember the Faith No More Guy? I know who number 1 is. Actually, I know who number 1 should be.
It should be Vlad, right?
Well, we'll see. Next up, I've never seen
this on there. I have a feeling who number 1 should be.
The next guy is Tie-Dye Guy. He's the guy who always dresses like Hogan.
Oh, sure.
He always has like the Hogan outfits. There's a picture of him with Sheamus. He's in the crowd. It's a newer picture because the picture is with Sheamus now and with the Mohawk and Triple H and Stephanie, so... Next is Sign Guy. His name's Rick Achberger. He's attended well over 1,000 shows.
Number one.
That's the guy who had the awesome sign. I think it was at WrestleMania 26 that says "Snap Jericho like a Slim Jim." So he was also on Deal or No Deal, or I guess he was through the crowd with Deal or No Deal.
Are we going back to game shows now?
I know, yes. I think he is number three. Obviously, number two. No, this is number three. Number three is, of course, Jordan Duncan thought it was Cheeks from the very first episode of
the Undertaker
of TNA.
Or the...
But it's a shocked Undertaker guy, Ellis Mbay.
Yeah, but he's not like a. But that's. I mean, I'm sure he's been in a lot of shows, but he had one great moment. You know, Rick Ashberger's been at every show. Like, what makes a great fan?
Oh, ah! They're taking guys. Well, so far in this countdown, we've seen guys who, are not WWE crowds. And the number two fan of all time is the infamous. His name is David Wills. The still real to me, damn it, guy.
Oh.
Wow, he made the list.
It's still real to me, damn it. With his little NWA t-shirt. And according to WWE.com, the number one fan in sports entertainment history, Vladimir.
Brian Schmock?
Obviously.
Sure. He's lucky he's on this earth. Vladimir.
Aren't we all, my friend?
Shout out to Ryan. I just heard his Brainbuster performance this week. He did a pretty good job in the speed round. He's pretty impressed.
Yeah, that episode was great.
I think he cheated. there is a picture on the Place to Be Nation live chats page. I believe it's on the live chats page. Or on the Place to Be Nation page. Rosero and I taking a picture with the great Vladimir. At Comic-Con, WrestleCon, the weekend of WrestleMania 29.
See, what's Vladimir's, like, career length? Because I was watching a primetime from 86, and I could swear he was there.
Here's the description. One of the most recognizable wrestling fans that I can ever recall, and this is Fink. This is Fink reading this. One of the most recognizable wrestling fans that I can ever recall was a fellow by the name of Vladimir. When I ring announced in Madison Square Garden during the 80s and 90s, he never missed an event. His unbridled passion for the product was second to none, and truth be told, he himself carved himself a niche of popularity among the Garden faithful by showing his support for the superstars who appeared in the world's most famous arena. Case in point, in a live Piper's Pit at MSG in October 1986, Piper was having his differences with Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, and his manager Bobby the Brain Heenan suggested a tag team match, and mentioned Harley Race could partner with Orndorff. Piper looked to the crowd and for ideas, saw Vladimir, and summoned him to come up to the ring apron. Vladimir got an MSG moment for himself by promptly saying that Hulk Hogan should be Piper's partner, and the Garden faithful erupted. Did you find that house show?
Yeah.
And the picture they have on the site is him congratulating Shawn Michaels after Shawn won the title at WrestleMania 12.
Now, what about the UFC Just Bleed guy? That's pretty epic 5 seconds.
He's no Vladimir.
No, he's not Vladimir.
But,
talking about with Just Bleed, he has it written on his forehead, and he looks like he had, like, rum, coke on top of vodka. With Everclear.
Yes. I like that the site acknowledged the fans, though. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are they missing anybody?
Are they missing somebody? What about... There's always that girl with the bright green shirt at the front row of WrestleMania. You know what I'm talking about? And they always have the guy that has the basketball jersey next to her. But that's just WrestleMania.
What about the guy that always dresses like Hogan?
Oh, yeah.
That guy. He's got
the one with Yokozuna when Yokozuna pins him.
Yeah.
And he's like in complete shock.
Yeah, that guy. He's been in a boatload of shit. Even like in the 90s when Hogan was in WCW.
He's dressing like Hollywood, I think, for a while.
Did he?
I thought maybe once
he might have been
dressed like Hollywood.
But even in WWF in the 90s when Hogan was in WCW, I think he used to dress as Hogan.
What about the old lady that tried to like take a swipe at Hollywood on Nitro?
Oh, that's awesome.
That would be one.
Oh, yeah, I've been listening to a lot of the Titans of Wrestling you can find on the PWOPTBN network. How about Super 8?
Yeah. And Vladimir's fucking jacked. He probably could wrestle. He's, like, ripped. Where's that guy live? He must live in the tri-state area. I'll have to ask D'Amato if he knows him.
It is D'Amato. I thought that was D'Amato.
you know,
they have a little bit of a resemblance.
D'Amato wishes he was in that kind of shape. What are you, out of your mind? It's D'Amato on roids.
Oh, God.
That was funny, Willie. I'll have to see if he's running. I'm sure he's run into him at Nassau Coliseum and the Gar, all the places that D'Amato usually frequents. Anyway, I was curious to look at that list. I'd never seen that before. And I wanted to just wanted to make sure that they gave respect to Vladimir, because. But I think my favorite might be the Miz girl. Well, she's got her way now because he's a useless piece of crap. So, in the end, angry Miz girl got what she wanted because now he's a forgettable joke. So, gentlemen, what a fun show! It's been a blast. Check out PlaceBeNation.com throughout the weekend. This will be up. You'll get your Battleground preview column. Pretty sure Dan McGinn will be doing it. He better. He's fired. And reaction show Sunday night, of course. Will and the guys will, of course, recap Battleground. And then I don't know when he'll post it, but my PIC and I with the next episode of the Place to Be podcast, our next Vintage Vault. And, yeah, all the other great shows here on Place to Be Nation's podcast network. Mr. Butler, are you on the next roundtable with Mr. Morse?
Yes, we will be. I'm not sure if he wants to announce which show we're doing.
Yeah, no, we won't announce it, but I just wasn't sure if you were on it yet.
Yes, so. Yes, I will be there.
Okay, I'm making an announcement that I won't be on it.
You have an off-season show to do with Adam Murray.
Yeah.
Get
please
him
listen.
Does he ask for lattes?
NBA team podcast.
Does he ask for lattes?
No, but with his throat, I think he should.
He's a big latte drinker.
We are on hiatus for the month of July. We're taking in summer league, chilling out. We'll be back.
Knicks are 3-0. Bitch.
Oh, the Pelicans are undefeated. Woo-hoo! Loving the new 10 seconds or 13 seconds or less. Something. It's an actual offense this time.
How's the Bulls summer league season going, Willie?
Jimmy Butler's back, baby. That's all I care about.
Mr. Randall and Mr. Russell.
Dougie McDermott's going crazy, and so people are getting really excited about him despite the fact that he's going to be sitting on the bench because Dunleavy got re-signed.
Mr. Russell and Mr. Randall.
Me and Adam were talking about this. There's just something kind of perversely fascinating about summer league and watching really bad basketball while watching really good talents every now and then. You know,
and if anybody needs a Doug McDermott jersey... My local Shield Sporting Goods store somehow got about 100 of them, thinking they were going to be hot sellers. So there's still about 99 Doug McDermott Bulls jerseys sitting in northern Wisconsin.
Don't give up yet.
Oh, that's funny.
Can't find Jimmy Butler anywhere, but Dougie Fresh, we got it.
We'll be back in 2 weeks. We shall have a special episode, a special topic. I will save it for when we have it that evening. We're in between summers, you know, here in SummerSlam, so we'll change things up. But it'll be a fun episode number 40, so stay tuned. For Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Glenn Butler, I'm Scott Criscolo. You've been in the main event. Enjoy Battleground. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
Does anybody remember when Mr. Perfect and Jim Duggan were on Double Dare? Thank God.
I do. And Bobby Heenan, yeah.
Thank God Duggan was there. He's my hero.